Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Thanks, as always, for joining us this week. So my quote today, it's a little bit long, but I think it's really impactful and important quote to share with you. And it's by Don Miguel Ruiz, and he says, "You see, everything is about belief. Whatever you believe rules our experiences and rules our lives. The belief system we create is like a little box we put ourselves inside of. We cannot escape because we believe we cannot escape. That is the situation. Humans create their own boundaries, their own limitations. We say what is humanly possible and what is not possible. Then just because we believe it, it becomes truth for us." Now, have you ever personally struggled with feelings related to your own self-worth, fear of rejection, maybe shame or blame? And would you ever describe yourself, take a minute to think about this, would you describe yourself as fascinating, imaginative, and just a capable human? And would you ever use these wonderful words to describe yourself, or the reverse, negative words? And do you feel like you are capable of enthusiastically working through life's inevitable obstacles while rearranging yourself mentally, emotionally, and physically? This I know is a pretty heavy topic and pretty heavy stuff to contemplate. But of course, my guest today is going to help us unravel the depth of those questions for you. So Heather Ash Amara, and her goal here is to help others achieve freedom from the inside out, genuinely believing that we are all fascinating, imaginative, and capable human beings. Now, Heather Ash is the founder of Toshi, and I don't know if I'm saying that right, the Toltec Center of Creative Intent, and the author of a number of books, including her newest book, which is what we're going to discuss today, The Warrior Heart Practice. Now, she brings an open-hearted, inclusive worldview to her writings and teachings, which are a rich blend of Toltec wisdom, European shamanism, Buddhism, and Native American ceremony. She lives in Austin, Texas, and she does travel extensively. So she's a brilliant guest to have on the show today. So Heather Ash, thank you so much for taking the time and being on the show today.
Thanks, Connie. It's so great to be here.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure. And I'm excited about our conversation. And I know that quote was a little long, but I thought, it says so much, I think, about the topic. And it's important. So first question, what are the map and the method of the Warrior Heart Practice? Can you share that for my listeners?
Absolutely. So the book's divided into two main parts. And the first part is what I call the map. And if you are lost. I mean, in the olden days, some of you may remember this, we had these things called paper maps. You'd unfold the paper map. And the first thing you would do if you were lost is figure out where you were. And then you would figure out where you were going. And so this map idea is that we first need to understand, where are we? How did we get here as humans? So that we can then decide where do we want to go and look at ways to navigate that. So the map's the big picture overview of how humans got to where we are. And really briefly, what I believe is we each have this part of us that I call our big soul. That's our essence that's connected, that is creative, it's excited, and that's really tapped into the universal life force, we can say. And then this part of us that's our little soul, which is separate. We call it our ego or our personality. And often these two parts get separated, and our little soul is trying to figure out how to manage the world. And so the work is, how do we reconnect the big soul and the little soul? And then the method, you also need to know the practical, how do I get from here to there? And so the method portion is about that step by step. Here's a tool to use to get you where you are now to where you want to go.
Which, right, as you just said that, I hope all my listeners are going, uh-huh. It's so clear. It's so obvious, but is it? I think we forget, Heather Ash, and I know people you work with, I think we forget to stop for a minute and say, okay, where am I? Right? What's my objective, my goals, whatever it is that I want to create in my life. So I'm here. I want to get there. There's a gap. That gap is the map. We need the map. right, to figure out to get from point A to point B, and then your methodology helps us execute. So why for humans is this logical approach of this map and method, why is it so important for us?
It's so important because, as you said, we often don't realize where we're at. We're, especially now, we're so busy. There's so many distractions. There's so many that are pulling our attention that we often don't stop to get quiet to say, okay, how am I doing? Where am I at right now? And then to also ask ourselves, what do we want, to get clear on that? And so to have both that step back, look at the big picture to get some clarity, and then the action steps. And again, a lot of my work is around taking things from concept to action. It's really easy to conceptualize things and to say, oh yeah, I want to do this, like to have a kind of a vague, like I want my life to look like this, or I want to do this thing in my life. But then we don't have the action steps behind it. And so we need both vision and clarity of next step.
And it's interesting because I think a lot of people can tell you, I want to create, but that's sometimes as far as it goes. So I have the vision of what I want, but we don't know how to execute. And it's funny that you say that, because when I meet with new clients, it's exactly what I say to them, this concept. And I like map and method. I might steal that. So when I'm with clients, I say, listen, you know, you want to hire me, you want to create better salespeople, create a culture of great customer service, right? We want to coach our employees to develop them, all these things. Wonderful. So this concept of map methodology, right? Same thing with my clients, like I just said. So I call it the how-tos, right? How to go from point A to point B to point C. And I don't think people always know. I think they know what they want, maybe intuitively, and maybe not. But I don't know that they always know how to execute to create whatever it is, that change, right? Obviously, my show is Enlightenment of Change, how to create that change. So I hope that visualization of having the map, cool, point A to point B, and then what is the methodology, right? What are the how-tos? So why don't you give us some of the steps to the warrior heart practice that you talk about in the book?
Absolutely. Whenever you're confused or stuck or triggered is when you want to step into the practice. And here's how I think about, like, another just great visual is that if you're clear about what you want and you're going towards it, what you have to realize is that you're planting a seed of what you want to create. And I believe the universe goes, yay, here's all the synchronicities and all the support and, like, all these things start coming online. But what also happens is all the challenges start to arise. And the challenges are not the universe saying, you're doing it wrong, you know, we don't support you. It's just, I believe, life saying, great, you want that thing, here's a challenge, clean this up. The challenge is simply the obstacle that is in the way, and it's internal. It's the way that we get to play with how to clean up the internal. And so if you have a challenge that's arisen, whether it looks like it's external or it feels like it's internal, you start with the warrior heart practice, and there's four chambers. And just like the heart, they're all really important. So the first chamber is what I call the feeling chamber. And we start by asking ourselves the question, what am I feeling? This is separate than what the story is. The second chamber is the story chamber. So what we're learning how to do is separate out the feeling versus the story. And most of us have the feeling and the story really tangled together. So learning how to just feel your feelings means you're not trying to fix your feelings, understand your feelings, justify your feelings. You're just going into what's happening in my body right now. I feel anger, it's in my chest. I feel anxiety, it's in my belly. And then you just breathe into it. That's all. Sounds super simple, but it takes a while to learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The second chamber is then the story. And the question is, what am I telling myself? What's the story that I have in my head? So you really look at your thoughts. And again, you don't want to edit them or try and make it better. You really want to see, what am I thinking? Because there's really important information about your belief system and your agreements. And so I like to tell people, pretend like you're an archaeologist when you go into your own story chamber. And as an archaeologist, you wouldn't pick up a shard from the ground, like a pottery shard, and go, I found a pottery shard, we're done here. You would start digging. And that's what I invite people to do in the story chamber, is you'll have the evidence of, you know, I'm upset and I have all these reasons why. But you want to be curious about what are the stories happening here? Because the stories we tell ourselves get incredibly tangled up. And so learning to start to witness them is the next step. And then the third step is the truth chamber. And so you step from story into this imaginary truth chamber and ask yourself, what can I see is true here? What is actually true? Not the story. And what we often do as humans is write a better story and we call it the truth. And so I really want to support people in learning the difference between a story and a truth. The truth is always incredibly simple. It's one sentence with a period. And there's no residue afterwards. It's just like, yep, that's true. Got it. And also, I believe really strongly, all of us know what's true for us and what's true. We have this resonance in our body. So when you hit the truth, you'll feel it. You'll have this like, yes, got it. And then the fourth chamber is intent. What's my focus? We go back to that, get clarity about what you want in this situation. And it's not how I want other people to behave or how I think the world should be. It's what am I willing to put my energy and action behind? What quality do I want to bring back into the situation? So it might be compassion. It might be love. It might be presence. It might be clarity. It could be anything, any word. But that's your North Star of where you're going to use to guide yourself forward. And then we go back through the chambers. And you take your intent, you go back into the truth chamber, you now hold hands with your truth as well, and now you walk back into the story chamber. And you'll be able to see your story from a very different perspective, because now you're looking through the eyes of your intent and through truth. And that so often puts us back in a sense of power and a sense of clarity about next steps. And then we always close the process in the feeling chamber. What am I feeling? So that you're coming full circle. So that's a brief overview.
I love that. So, and it's so clear, right? You go through the circle one way, and then you go back through the circle the opposite way. So the feeling that you initially started with actually changes and creates a feeling of power versus that feeling of distress or limitation. So that's so cool. Now, okay, can you do me a favor? And I think I love that you're a visual, like you're speaking from a visual perspective, because I think like 80% of the world were visual learners. Can you give me an example of here was a feeling that someone had, here was their story, here was their truth, and here was their intent, and then go back for us. And then just to, again, a good how-to so people go, oh, that makes sense.
Absolutely. Okay. I'll do a really practical one.
Okay.
There's a ton of examples in the book because I so agree. Like, we need stories. That helps us experiences. And so one experience I had, this is a really simple one, was many years ago, I checked the bank account on my business. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to pay payroll. And you know, the business has been going for 5 years. So it was a huge shock. And I went into this whole spin of like, I don't know what I'm doing with money, like all the stories. So I was like, stop. Take a breath. Feeling, what are you feeling? And I felt anxious. I felt ashamed. Those were the biggest ones. And I just sat with there's anxiety and there's the shame. Wow, I have shame around finances. Okay, just hang out with that. And then I went to the story, and the story was, you should have been paying more attention. You know, how could this have happened? This is going to be a disaster. You're going to have to close the business. I mean, there was a huge story going on. You're going to have to close the business, blah, 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 blah. And some other things tied in with that as well. And then I went to the truth, and I just got really quiet. And this is the important thing. The story often, when you're in the story chamber, it's really loud and muddy and messy. And often there's a lot of different pieces. So like when I was in the story chamber in this particular instance, there was also old stories about childhood, about math, like, because I was told by a math teacher once, you know, you shouldn't do math. So that got woven in as well. But the truth chamber is very quiet. And I just got quiet and I just waited. And I said, I asked, what's true? What's actually true here? And I sat with it and I waited and I realized, oh, I just paid off 2 years of taxes because of a financial thing this year. And I just bought land. Period. Like, those things were both true. And I was like, that was a huge amount of money going out. Okay, what else is true? And I realized what else was true is, if you're an entrepreneur, money comes and money cycles. That's part of being an entrepreneur. And I was like, right, being an entrepreneur means there's waves, period. Now, if I had gone, means that there's waves and I should be able to manage that, I'm back in story. But that place of being an entrepreneur, money goes in cycles, period. There's just clarity. Got it. What's my intent? And my intent was clarity, I believe, at that time, of just getting everything settled and sorted without punishing myself or without making this huge freak out. And I just went back through the chapters and went back to the truth and went back into the story. And I'm like, I just need to get clear with my next action, period. Do I need to borrow money? What do I need to transfer? Like, it was just super clear. And the feeling sense was relieved. And also this, like, and what do I do so this doesn't happen again? All the noise, gone. And I've done this process with myself and with hundreds of other people now on little things like finances and big things like relationships, health issues. So it's very practical in that way, but it also lets you see what those old stories are that are holding you back.
It's fascinating because we have these, it was interesting that you mentioned from a child, right? You're not good at math. So you're not going to be able to, I can't manage money because I'm not good at math. And I don't know, you know, the cash flow process and that's math. And I'm not right. It's all in that. It's all in woven almost into our DNA. And I know you, I'm sure you know this, that they've done so much research, with mice and they've gone back where beliefs, not only our own beliefs, our own crap from childhood, like you just described, you're not good at math. Some ridiculous teacher said it to you. You're a kid. You believe it because it's a teacher, an authority figure. Well, we have beliefs from generations ago, not just our own crap that we're dealing with. So this is such a practical usage of four easy steps. And let me rephrase that. There are four clear steps. They're not always easy to do because we love our stories. And sometimes the story is easier to relate to, right? Than trying to change it. Just like you said with the finances, right? You idiot. You're a bad entrepreneur. You shouldn't be an entrepreneur. All of that chaos of I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough, right? Who do I think I am to be able to be an entrepreneur and have employees working for, right? All of that crap is rumbling through our brain, but we love our stories because I think mentally it keeps us safe. So why have you seen with all the people you work with and now that you've done this work with yourself, you know, creating the book and the process, why do you think we get caught in our stories and how, you know, you mentioned separating the feelings from the story and the truth. So why do we like our stories? And then what are some practical ways to compartmentalize them so we could create the clarity, like you said at the end, the intent?
Yes. The part of why we love our stories so much is that we become identified with them. So we think we are the story. We don't even realize it's a story. It's just reality.
Sure.
No. So I'm bad at math. I could make all sorts of cases to show how that's true. But actually, when I started actually doing math stuff, I was like, I actually kind of like this, right? But sometimes we're so fixated on somebody told me I should be this way, or I have this really strong belief and experience. And as humans, we are incredible selective evidence gatherers. So we can pull in experiences that make us right about our beliefs and then ignore the experiences that show that we're incorrect. And we would rather be right. Like, there's a part of our brain that just wants to be right, just wants to know. So we're great storytellers. And really, how to start stepping out of that is to start questioning our thoughts, to start witnessing what we're thinking rather than just, this is the way the world is, this is the way I am, this is truth. To realize pretty much everything you're thinking is a story. It's based on an experience that you had that you're not having now. Or like you said, epigenetics are now learning that our ancestors' beliefs get passed down into our DNA. So all you have to do is start paying attention to how you're responding to the world, how you're thinking. All you have to do, it's super simple. It's easy, or it's simple, but it's not necessarily easy to witness yourself.
Yeah.
But it's really, if you get curious and you're like, well, what am I doing? What am I telling myself? It becomes fun because you become an investigator. And
it's cool.
The piece of separating the feeling out just takes practice, really. It's often when you can keep a feeling going forever, and you can keep a story going forever. So if you tell yourself a story, you have a feeling about it, the feeling makes you tell the story again, and then the story gets reinforced, and then you have the feeling again. You can ping pong back and forth between the feeling and the story chamber forever. And so that's why it's so critical to separate out, to say, what do I know is actually true here? Because that helps you then get a handle on the story. And also separating the feelings out helps you get a handle on the story, because you've given yourself permission to have the feelings. And a lot of us have really deep stories around, I'm not allowed to feel, I shouldn't have this feeling, I'm going to get in trouble if I feel this way. So we have all of these mental structures around our emotional body,
yeah.
And we spend a lot of energy exiting the emotional body. So yeah. It takes courage, but it's an incredible transformation.
And I also think with the feeling piece of it, when I'm feeling frustrated or I'm feeling I'm not good enough, we bury it because I don't want to feel that way. So we start taking drinks and we start, you know, doing other type of ways to camouflage what's really going on. It's easier to escape than to investigate. And I love that word, investigate. And I just want to share a really interesting story. As you were speaking, this is what popped into my head. I live in, I know you're probably not familiar with New Jersey, but I live in Holmdel, and it's an affluent town. Okay. I grew up in an affluent town, and my parents were middle-class people, and we were in what were the normal houses, like ranches, right? But there are these huge homes and mansions right within the town. So one day my husband and I were driving down a road, and it was new construction that had, and as it was being built, I'm like, wow, that is that like a five family house. It was ginormous, probably 6,000-7,000 square feet, which is a big house. So it might have even been 10,000 square feet, right? It was just huge. And then after the house was built, they had like the little tykes, you could see the little tyke slide. So clearly was a young family that moved in. It wasn't like someone my age where you think, oh, they've accumulated money through their life. They're probably in their 30s. And I looked over, and as we were driving, this came out of my mouth. I wonder what he does for a living. I bet he's a crook. And as soon as Heather Ash, as soon as I said it, I literally went like, and my husband looked at me and I looked at him and I was like, oh my goodness, where did that come from? And he looked at me in horror. Where did that come from? And so he said, Connie, where did that come from? And as we started talking, my first memory of reflecting onto a big house, I grew up in Newark, which is not a nice neighborhood in New Jersey, and it was during the riots, but we were driving by, my mom and dad and four kids in the car with them. I was little. I was probably about five. We passed by this beautiful, beautiful homes in this one section of Holmdel. Well, it was known to be the mob, right? That's where they lived. And so as they were walking by, kid, right? I was like, who lives in that house? It's magical. They must be like princesses, right? Kid's perspective. And at the same time, my parents say, crooks, people have guns, they kill people, you know, and they attacked me thinking, you know, you don't ever want to be in this neighborhood alone. Can you imagine? So fear of a parent not trying to hurt me in any way, but coming from this protective stance. But I'm a five-year-old thinking, big house, bad people, they're crooks. Fast forward, you know, in my early 50s, this is exactly what came out of my mouth. So I reflected on that and thought, wow, man, this guy might have created the cure for cancer or have created some beautiful innovation that I use in my life. But instead of thinking that, I immediately went to the crook. So that was the beginning of my shift in my belief system about money. And I apparently, and probably still do, but I had big issues around money. I wasn't deserving, because if I got paid more, or if I had more clients, or my business was more successful, people were going to think I was a crook. So that was my right. So does that make sense?
It's a brilliant example, because it's such a simple incident in your life that you wouldn't even remember.
No.
And yet it's tied all of these things together that was limiting your finances,
sure,
probably, and how you were in relationship to other people. Yeah, exactly. It's such an exact replica of what we do.
over and over again. Yeah, that was my story without realizing it was my story until I separated that feeling of, like, I had disgust. That was the feeling I felt looking at this house. Like, who are you to judge, right? Whoa. And then my story of, where did that come from? Then the truth is, this guy could have been an innovator. And then again, the last step, which is the intent, I don't want to behave that way. That was really ugly, right? And that's certainly not who I am. And then you go back through, what is the truth, right? He probably was a beautiful innovator. You know, what is my story? Okay, that's where it came from. It is what it is. It's not true. And then you go back to the feeling of, and it was funny because almost in that same few minutes we talked, my feeling was, send them love. Simple. So from this disgust to, keep doing what you're doing. Like, keep creating whatever it is you're creating to create such abundance. And hopefully you're doing wonderful things with that abundance, charities and other things, right? So what a shift of the paradigm of thinking. Not easy to do, Heather Ash. Not easy to do. I have another question. In the book, you talk about spiritual smudges. What is that?
Yes. Spiritual smugness. And it's, you know, it's exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, smugness. Smugness.
Yeah, no worries. Two pieces. Just that because of the awareness you had, you were able to stop and then work it through with your husband and get clarity, which is so beautiful. And what we have to be careful of is not doing things like, oh my God, I'm a bad person because I just judged these people. I'm going to repress the story even more and try and be a better person. Because now we buried it even deeper.
Right.
So that's why it's like, be with the mess. Bring the mess up so you can clean it. Spiritual smugness is when we start to clean up our mess. And then we go, I'm doing really well. I have clarity. I've cleaned my mess up. Oh, you over there, you need to do more work. It's really easy to fall into. And I saw this. I was on a plane and there was a woman next to me who was a vegan. And her attitude was so intense of this like smugness of like, it was epic. And I'm just looking at her going, oh my God, she's creating so much suffering for herself by judging everybody else for not being
perfect.
Right.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And so the spiritual smugness is something we just have to pay attention to as we're unraveling our stories, because your little ego self, your little soul wants to come in and go, oh, you're doing so well. And you're doing so much better than everybody else. And it's a story. We're all equal. We're all working. We all have stuff. We all are cleaning. And so to really keep holding that place of humility and blessing for where everybody else is in their path.
And it's, we judge, man. Like you're saying, this woman, and it's so funny, we don't see it in ourselves that we're judgy, but all of a sudden you see someone with such hard judgment of others around them. That's bad, because there's some story going on that I hold myself in higher regard. It's probably really a level of lack of confidence when someone, I think, comes from this, I'm better than you. Really, they feel that lack of confidence. And it's so funny because I openly admit I'm a freaking mess, right? And every day is effort to try to change and become a little bit better. But you're never, ever going to complete, because life changes, circumstances change, traumas happen, right? Life, it just, deaths, loss of jobs, all of those things. So we're always, I think, in constant flux. And I think the book is really about being fluid, right? Where you're never, ever done, right? Wouldn't you say that? That there's always more to work. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tease people. I'm like, it's not called the warrior heart finish. It's called the warrior heart practice. Because we do, another story we create is like, well, I'll just complete this. I'll like fix myself, or like I'll, you know, make the right amount of money, or like whatever we do, like I'll marry the right person and then everything will be fine.
Perfect,
and I'll be
right.
Good. Then I don't have to work so hard anymore. And the truth is, life is in flux constantly. We're constantly adjusting. So I really agree with you. And I love that word fluidity, is we're learning to show up with what's arising. What's the challenge that's arising? Yeah. What's the gift that's arising? And the truth is, the challenges and the gifts are the same. Challenges are often what help us become who we're meant to be. They're the one, it's what then creates the courage and the capacity and the strength inside of us.
Which is interesting because I think, and I'm sure you, your own personal life, as I look back on my lives, my own personal life, there's pivotal moments, what I call pivotal moments, crossroads, whatever you want to call it, but where things happened that seemed at the time, how am I going to survive this? How, whether it was financial or otherwise, what are we going to do? And you go to the worst case scenario, we're going to die, I'm going to lose everything, right? Whatever it is, that ultimate, holy crap, this could be the end. And, you know, a week later, that's no longer true. So when people have trauma like that, that moment of fear, I guess it's fear that we think, holy crap, the worst is going to happen. What do you tell people to do? Because it's hard. What we're talking about, though, Heather Ash, it's hard when the trauma is happening to go into that, the four steps, right? The four components.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two things. One is to start to really understand that most of us humans have really well-developed disaster mind. It's what I call disaster mind, where something will happen and we're immediately like, I'm going to be homeless. Everyone's going to hate me. I'm going to lose everything. Like, yeah. And some tiny little thing happens, right? And we're like, boom, way out. So one of my favorite tools, it's super simple, but it's just the period. So anytime that your mind starts going into huge story, just take a breath, period, stop. Come back into the present moment. And this is that place of separating out what's actually true, what story, what's actually true. And the other piece is to really play with this idea of, this is a fun one, of like, what if up? My friend Mindy Odland wrote this great book. And the what if up process is, instead of saying, what if this is the worst disaster ever and da 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 da, we say, what if this is going to bring the exact lesson that I need to help me to get my feet on the ground? What if this is going to bring me the abundance that I've been looking for? What if? So you just start to change the brain. But it takes work, is the truth. Our little brains are like, they're trying to stay safe. They're trying to manage. And so it's not about punishing the mind or like fighting your disaster mind, but of just like, come here, sweetheart. Oh, you're upset. You're scared. Come here. Let me hold you. Let me be present with you. And that's why learning to do the feeling chamber first, what it does is it teaches you to sit with your emotions without going into story.
Judging.
Yeah.
Without judging, judgment. Without
freaking out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But just like, I'm feeling sad. Be with the sadness, period. And to bring the quality of what's the energy that you would bring to a friend who is sick or who is dying? What's the quality of energy? Go sit. And you would bring your patience, your presence, your compassion, your stillness. That's what you want to bring to the emotional body. And keep the mind like, and I think that's why the practice works so well, is because what you're saying is not, mind, I'm not going to listen to you. You're saying, I'll get to you in a second. Hi, emotional body, we're starting with you. Now, there's one place that you actually don't want to start in the feeling chamber, and that is if you are in a trauma episode. So for people that have trauma, a trauma background, that have PTSD or have complex trauma, if you're triggered in such a way that your nervous system is activated, don't go to the feeling chamber because you're just going to re-trigger yourself. What you want to do is actually start in the truth chamber. What's true here? So example that I gave in the book is one of my friends was washing her dishes and all of a sudden had a full-on body memory of being sexually abused when she was a kid, out of nowhere. And she's in this high level of trauma, and she immediately, because she's done the practice so much, she immediately said, what's true? What's true here? And she put her hands on her sink and she took a breath. I'm in my kitchen. I'm an adult. I'm safe. And she just told herself the truth over and over again. And that permeated the trauma. And she was able to then come back. All right, what's my intent? She picked a word for her intent. And then she went back through the process. Then she went to look at the story. But she now had capacity. So that's a really important piece for working the practice. So this isn't just around feelings, because feelings can be really intense and you can hang with them. But it's a different if your nervous system is activated into trauma.
You know, we are complicated beings. And just like, you know, if you want to start eating healthy, you can't just have one salad and say, I'm eating healthy, or I'm going to exercise and do the exercise bike for an hour one day and you never do it again. You're never going to get healthy. What you're describing, and that's why I love that you have the practice, right? The warrior heart practice, because our brains are muscles and we have to retrain them and build those new muscles because our thoughts really do. I think it was Wayne Dyer said our thoughts become our reality. So if we keep thinking this stay in our story of negativity, what's going to become our reality? We're going to validate it, and more bad stuff is going to come into your life. So we have to train the brain or retrain the brain using these muscles. And this is just such a great exercise. Really, your book is an exercise, right? Those four steps that you give are, it's an exercise to use the brain in a better frame of reference so that we can really, our thoughts can create the reality that we want, not that we think, I'm stuck here. So we can unstuck ourselves almost, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. And I think about it, like if you have an engine that's not working well and it's gotten all gunked up and it hasn't been taken care of, it's really what our emotions and our story is like, is there's all this gunk in that, and we don't even know what's wrong. We can't see it. So you have to take the pieces apart. You take the pieces of an engine apart, you clean all the pieces. You don't go, these are bad pieces, this is a bad engine. It's just like, okay, it's not working efficiently. Take it apart, clean it. And that's the separating of the feeling of the story, is that we're starting to clean things up and separate it out. Then when you put it back together, you know what to do. And that's really my prayer with this practice. And it is, it's like showering, flossing your teeth, exercising, keep doing it. Sure. Or any practice that helps you get clarity. This is a really simple one. It's a really, you can use it every day for like, oh, I'm frustrated, or I just got upset, you know, in the grocery store, just 5 minutes. And I've had some big, big things that I had to unravel that have taken me, because I've done the practice so many times now, but like 20 minutes to unravel something that would have taken me months, literally. So it's a beautiful thing to get into your being and bring in, and just know you're going to be doing it over and over and over again. And it gets easier because you get to know yourself. You become more intimate with your stories and where your mind goes. And yeah, it does become easier.
It does become easier, but it's still effort. And I think there's no easy way, we're out of time, but there's no easy way to work through this. You have to put in the time to retrain your brain. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. But it's like you said, the flossing, the showering. You know, if the lights went out, you'd still be able to do your morning and night routine because it's a habit. That's I think what you're recommending is four easy steps. You have to use them over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. It'll get easier, but it'll just become a habit. So it'll be your go-to when something bad happens, you get angry, frustrated, overwhelmed. You go into those four steps, you know, of the feeling, the story, the truth, and then what is my intent. And then, yes, you know, go back out through it. Hey guys, simple, easy stuff here to implement into your life and make a practice or create that new practice or take the bad habits and create this maybe as a good habit in your life. Check out heatherashamara.com. And I will post that on my Web Talk Radio, Enlightenment of Change platform so you guys can find her. But I highly recommend buying the book, reading the book, you know, the Warrior Heart Practice. It'll just give you so much insight and the tools and the steps for you to create whatever that future looks like. You know, and here's the cool thing, Heather Ash. I love this topic, obviously, because I'm always working on myself. So I love learning new tools myself personally. But it's a new decade, you know, 2020, man, we're here, new decade. You know, don't even think just my New Year's resolution, but what is my decade? What do I want to create in the next 1, 5, 10 years? So you could really use this tool to project and catapult that, whatever that creation is that you're looking for. So thank you for sharing this with us. And I appreciate the stories, you know, that you share in the book as well, because I do think agree examples people can relate to and go, oh, that happened to me. Oh, that happened to my friend. And then it grounds it into execution. I'm able to execute easier. So thank you for that, Heather Ash. Really delightful to have you on.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, a pleasure. And you guys, my partner and I are still offering free communication style assessment. It's on wisdomdecoded.com, right on the landing page. Find out what, like, we're talking about stories and stuff, how we're wired and our internal thinking process. You're born a certain way as well to process information and to respond to information. And the communication style assessment helps you kind of weave through that. And we give you a report with some recommendations to help, just like Heather Ash is guiding us. It's just another tool to help you guide. So please check that out as well. Heather Ash, thank you again for being on the show. Real pleasure and just great conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure. And I hope you guys will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together that change, whatever that means for you or wherever you are in your life. It's easier than you think, and they're easier, but you have to put the effort out. And I hope the tools that Heather Ash shared with you, my communication style assessment, all my guests that come on, hopefully they help you navigate whatever change you're going through to make it just a little bit easier, which is a beautiful thing. So thank you all for joining me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, on web, Connie Whitman on webtalkradio.net. I wish you all an inspired week. Try the 4-step practice. Go out and buy the book and let me know. Respond. Let me know. Let Heather Ash know on her website, you know, what kind of sensational changes you've created in your life. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.